Welcome to Module 5 in this Shared Management for Providers series of resources. It's great to have you with us. I'm Leighton Jay, and I'm your host throughout this series. I'm delighted that my co-host today is Melanie Hawkes. Welcome, Melanie. It's great to be working with you.
Hi, Leighton, and hello, everyone. Thanks for inviting me to be part of this project.
Melanie works part-time as a video editor's assistant, and she lives also with the experience of disability in her life on a daily basis.
Yes, that's right. And I regularly use a range of services that enable me to live the life that I want. So, Leighton, we're examining how providers can work in partnership with people and families in ways that genuinely enable them to be leaders who shape support services.
Yeah, that's right, Melanie. And while that may sound ambitious, it's firmly aligned with the intentions of the NDIS Act, as we've already seen in this series. As a result, it may challenge some elements of providers' basic business or service models. If you as a provider don't have deeply held values and a culture that fosters genuine partnerships with people and families and empowers them to be leaders, then you could be setting yourself up for frustration if you offer shared management.
Yeah, that's right. In Module 2, we saw that in some organisations, you may need to do some other, broader scope work before they'll be in a position to succeed with high-quality shared management. Your leaders need to clearly demonstrate that your organisation is committed to giving power and authority to people and families before shared management will work well, and that can be a challenge.
Indeed. And if you aren't already able to do that just yet, then shared management might not be a service that you should be offering at this time.
Let's just talk for a moment about what can happen when you're a service provider that doesn't support people and families to take the lead.
Well, Melanie, if your culture and your values and your systems and your governance don't support people and families to be in the lead, but you do expect your frontline employees to support people to take a lead in their own lives, then you're creating an unhealthy expectations gap.
Yeah.
Because some support workers will understandably think that people and families really do have the power and authority to make decisions about their support and services. When they try and operationalise that, they're likely to keep running into elements of your systems or other workers or your governance arrangements that will actually prevent that from happening.
Yeah, and that's frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely.
So does that mean that include things like policies and operational procedures, IT systems, human resource requirements? Is that what you have in mind?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Melanie. When your employees feel frustrated, then their passion and morale are probably going to decrease, and you can expect that some of them will grumble about their frustrations. And in lots of organisations, when that starts happening, it further feeds a downward spiral of low morale.
Yeah, and you don't want that to happen.
No.
But if it does happen, you can be fairly sure that a proportion of your workers will pass on some of their frustration and disempowerment to the people they work with.
Yeah, that's right. In service businesses, that's what happens, and that can lead to people and families being and feeling frustrated or disempowered themselves. I've seen some situations where people aren't allowed to or can't really make decisions for themselves, and sometimes it becomes a form of learned helplessness for them, and that works against them having big dreams or taking control of their lives in the way that they should be under the NDIS.
Yeah, we don't want that happening. And I think it's also likely that people get the message that their knowledge, skills and their experience isn't valued.
Yep.
So they don't share it with your organisation, meaning you lose opportunities to improve your services.
Exactly. And in that situation, your culture could stagnate or at least not develop in ways that could be really handy, and it might become risk averse. And I think there's a real risk that some of your good employees may decide they want to work elsewhere in those sort of situations too.
You don't want to lose a good worker.
No, not at all.
So that means also people who use your services won't be recommending your organisation to other people and families. And you should expect that some of them will go looking for a different provider, given that many people will have more choices in the NDIS environment.
Yep, that's spot on. And so what happens when you are able to work in partnership with people and families taking the lead?
Well, I personally feel fortunate to have a provider that really does want to work in partnership with me and with others. And because they do this pretty well, I know that I and others feel valued and respected.
That's great.
That gives us the confidence to really make our own decisions, especially when support workers know how best to support us to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be really empowering for a lot of people with disabilities.
Mm. So just like you're doing now, people become walking advertisements for your organisation and they say good things about you as a provider, and other people will at least check out your services, huh?
Yeah, that can only be a good thing. I think it's also true to say that when providers value the knowledge, skills and experience we have, we're more willing to work with them so that everyone can benefit. You'll find that many of us dream bigger dreams, mm-hmm. and these can become a virtuous cycle.
Yep.
They produce positive mindsets, a willingness to push boundaries, openness and inclusiveness, and just generosity of spirit.
Yeah, one of my observations as a family member, Melanie, is that support workers often find their work to be more meaningful and rewarding too, and that results in higher morale and attracts new staff who want to work for the organisation.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with a more forward-looking culture, genuinely respectful values and a bit more innovation happening.
Right. All of this helps make you an employer of choice.
Yeah.
And in the NJS world, attracting good staff is as important as attracting and keeping people as customers. So it's worth learning how to do this partnership thing really well.
Great. Now, all of that gets us to Activity 5.0 in your Module 5 workbook. So we want you to turn to that now. And if you need to pause the recording while you open up to this page, please do so.
You'll see a short quiz that may look familiar to you.
And that's because it was part of Activity 1.3 in Module 1.
We want you to rate your organisation against 6 statements using the scale we've provided. If you did the Module 1 quiz, you might prefer to look up how you scored these questions in the Module 1 workbook and transfer your answers here.
Or you can do the quiz again if you want to now. Either way, just pause the recording and do the activity. And when you're ready to resume, just click play. There are 5 learning outcomes for this module. You can find them in the introduction to your workbook. Take a moment to read or peruse them. You'll see that they combine both operational and strategic elements.
That's because we want you to think about how you can make this part of your continuous improvement journey. The learning outcomes are, 1, identify behaviours and practices that promote people being in control of their decision making.
2, support and empower your organisation's staff to build the autonomy, capacity and capability of people and family members.
And 3, discuss at least 3 ways that you can integrate the knowledge, skills, strategies and experiences of people you support into your organisation's systems and practices.
4, describe at least 3 ways to engage the people you support to share their knowledge, skills and experiences with other people and families.
And 5, identify 2 or 3 strategic initiatives your organisation could implement to consistently improve how you work in partnership with people and families in the lead.
So let's go straight to Activity 5.1, which addresses the first learning outcome, behaviours and practices that promote people being able to make their own decisions. Turn to Activity 5.1 in your workbook now. If you're watching the video, it should look like this.
You will see that in this activity, we have repeated the statements from Activity 5.0. But this time, we want you to reflect more deeply on your responses to the statements. What observable evidence mm-hmm. is there to show that your organisation does some of these things?
Yep.
Make some notes about this in the middle column. What behaviours and actions would an observer see or hear?
And in the right-hand column, add some notes about what other actions and behaviours you hope to see as evidence in the future. If you scored your organisation low or poorly on any item, then this is the column to concentrate on. What evidence do you really want to see, others to see and hear when you're doing this well in the future? Pause the recording now and complete the activity. And click play to continue when you've finished it. How did you go? You'll come back to these notes in just a moment as part of Activity 5.2, which we're ready to do now. If you're watching the video, you'll see that Activity 5.2 looks like this.
You'll see that we've given you 3 short questions with a response box for each one. We're going to hear directly from people who are sharing their knowledge and experience. Some of these people are shared management users, while others work for providers that offer shared management.
And as you watch or listen, make some notes in response to just the first 2 questions.
Conversations around how checking in, how things are going. people who share manage, sometimes they get a bit nervous that, you know, we're saying it's a partnership, but then when it comes to tricky things, that it's not really a partnership. So that's when it really becomes important that you keep that in mind and that you really walk alongside the person through that, that it's not a partnership when it's easy, it's a partnership the whole time. So you have to kind of keep that in mind when you're working with more sensitive things like restrictive practice or quality and safeguarding or serious incidents.
It's about, you know, spending time building the connection, the relationship, understanding the person and their desires, and very much about checking in that those things are happening for them in their lives. And that can be different for everybody.
Making sure that all those minimum working conditions are a foundation for a positive relationship, and that notion of give and take. And there's swings and roundabouts, because that's human life.
I would say what you would see is a lot of coaching. So, you know, where people need it and request it. And when I say coaching, it's around the key stuff that shared management people do in terms of getting their support, and that is around recruitment.
They're very good at telling me or helping me to navigate my way around my responsibilities, because they're all different under NDIS as opposed to DSC. Also navigating the portal.
So that connection and relationship is so important with individuals and the provider. So you're working together to feel confident and safe to have those tricky conversations. Mm. That's really very important. Mm. Yeah. You'd also be having conversations around any concerns or issues. You'd hear problem-solving conversations. You may be hearing and support. You may be hearing people, advisors support individuals to problem-solve, and it may be about helping them make a phone call.
Not making decisions for me, but guiding me to a decision, and would say, well, you need to check this website on minimum working conditions. This is what other people have done. You might want to consider what this contract says. But it's really for me and my support workers to negotiate rates of pay, holiday pay.
But if it is the individual, it would be very much around the advisor working together with the individual to make those decisions. It would be the advisor understanding a particular person's communication style, knowing how they communicate so that they can interact and support them around their decision making for their circumstance.
So we always have my daughter on the interview panel.
Great.
She will tell us, not necessarily through words, but through action, whether that person warrants her time, warrants to be bothered to spend time with that person.
But also something I didn't realise my provider was doing behind these scenes was they were actually doing a background check, which I'm really grateful for now. Because one person that I did hire, they then did a background check and found that there was suspended sentence for possessing a firearm, or there was something, and it was serious enough for me to go, yeah, I don't want you to be around my family. So as far as safeguarding is concerned, I feel that my provider has my back as well.
How did you go with that? Hopefully you got some good ideas. Pause the recording again and take a minute or two to answer question 3. List your top 3 strategic ideas or actions. And as you do this, look again at your answers to activity 5.1. What strategic approaches will lead to your people acting and behaving the way that you think they need to in the future? Melanie, I'm curious to know what comes to mind for you when you think about things that providers can do to help develop people's capacity, autonomy and capability.
Good question, Leighton. One thing I'd like to say or add is that if somebody's got a dream, start with small steps and build up from there. Create a way for that dream to happen and work towards a goal that the person has in mind by setting out some clear steps. For example, if someone's dream is to move out of their parents' home, the small steps might include learning some simple cooking skills and building their network of friends to ensure they won't be lonely.
Yeah.
They might even find themselves a housemate and develop some of the other skills that young adults typically need when they move out of home. This is a really normal pathway, though some people need support with setting it out clearly for them.
That's a great example, Melanie.
Thanks. And Leighton, don't you think that shared management should benefit providers as well as the people who use it?
Oh, absolutely, Melanie. Leanne Pearman, Rosie Lorne and I actually discussed this in the first module. One of the benefits we identified was that providers can learn a lot from the people and families who are being creative and innovative. Their lived experience is actually extremely valuable, and if you're a switched-on provider, you'll try to integrate what you learn from those people across lots of your services.
So this next activity is designed to help you do this. It's activity 5.3, and you can turn to it now.
If you want to discover what people and families know, you need to ask them some good questions, and you need to listen closely to what they have to say. Be respectful and be curious. You want to understand not just what they do, but why they do things.
So you'll see that we've given you another table to complete. We want you to identify up to four people or family members that you can speak to who are doing something creative or innovative with their supports. Identify who is the best person to have a conversation with them and commit to a realistic deadline by which you can do this. And keep in mind that the person's availability might be limited due to their circumstances or situation.
Now, we've created one example in the table for you to show you what we want you to do. This is a guy called Kevin, and he's consistently able to recruit great support staff to work with him, despite being someone who's often labelled as intellectually disabled and who doesn't use words to communicate.
Right. You might want to ask questions like, who helps and supports Kevin with recruiting his workers? What is his role? What is theirs?
And where does he advertise for workers and how does he decide between applicants?
And as you think about what your organisation can learn, you might want to ask yourself questions like, how could Kevin teach our organisation how we can do something like this? And what will it actually take for us to give the people who use our services more choice about who works with them and in what capacity?
Your organisation's systems and practices might be so used to working in a particular way that you need to ask, how can we convince HR that this is worth trying? Or do our industrial agreements with employees create barriers to trialling or implementing something like Kevin's approach? What can we do to overcome these barriers?
Incorporating changes like this into your organisation won't necessarily be easy. You might need to renegotiate employment contracts with staff or address limitations in your IT system or change your staff management processes.
But if you never ask, what will it take for us to do this, you're missing an opportunity to explore or implement things that people are saying are important to them. There could be some really positive and some valuable changes you can make to your service design, delivery, and your organisational systems. You're basically missing a great opportunity to become a better service delivery organisation.
Yeah, and make sure you explore how to integrate new approaches and ideas when you're meeting with the people or families that you interview. Get their thoughts and ideas, even if they don't know much about your organisation. Value their input anyway, and think about who else in your organisation you need to speak with to keep this moving.
Working out what it will take to integrate new ideas into the way you do things will take a bit of work. It's not something you're going to solve as part of this module right now, but keep it on your radar, plan how you can do it, and do more work on it when the time is right.
And think about who else could assist you with making changes.
Yeah, it could be a key leader in your organisation, or it might be another person or family you know of,
mm-hmm.
or maybe even someone right outside your organisation who has particular skills that will help achieve some cut through on some of these things.
So just pause the recording now and spend a few minutes completing the table. When you're ready to go on, we'll be moving on to activity 5.4. So turn to that one in your workbook and click play on the recording when you're ready.
In activity 5.4, we're shifting focus away from what you as a provider can learn from people and families. We now want to focus on what you can do that will enable people and families to learn from one another.
And especially to learn from people who are pushing the boundaries a bit. After years of shared management and self-management in WA, we know that the people and families who use these options are often real leaders when it comes to being innovative, creative, and truly inclusive.
That is so true, Melanie. So it makes sense to ask how you can engage and develop the people who use these options to be leaders who share their knowledge, their skills, and their experience with other people and families. We want you to start by identifying just two people that you know who fit this description.
These could be the same people you identified for activity 5.3, or different people. It doesn't matter. We're asking you different questions in this activity.
That's right. It's fair to say that Melanie and I have both been around the sector for a while, so we've seen lots of different things tried. Some of these have worked and others not so much. Right now, we're going to describe a few approaches that we've personally experienced as ways that facilitate people and families to have leadership roles. So think about which of these ideas resonate with you.
Mm-hmm.
As you listen in, make some notes in your workbook about which of these you think might be worth exploring with the two people you've identified.
You'll notice that we're only asking you to identify two people. There could be more, but we want this to be something you put into action. That's why we've limited the scope. So here's the things we've experienced. Make some notes in the box under question B.
So forums. People and family forums can be one-off events or they can be recurring events. They can be organised and run by single organisations. They can involve collaborations with people from other providers and organisations. They can also be local, sector-wide, statewide or even national events.
Your organisation can actively support people to develop their skills for sharing their knowledge by sponsoring them to attend and present at conferences and events.
That's right, yeah, I've seen that one work really well with a few organisations in Victoria. Another one is, do you have people with disability on your board? If not, why not? What support might they need to perform a board role? Could you create some sort of adjunct board role or position so that people learn the skills they need without taking on more responsibility that they can handle?
Projects can be initiatives that people and family identify and want to run with, or they can be projects you want to run. Can you reframe them so that people and families have leadership roles that enable them to grow their skills while sharing their knowledge and experience with others?
Do you employ people with disability? Do you have targets for employing people with disability? Do you have peer mentor roles? What other roles will enable a person with disability to share their skills and knowledge with other people and families? Can you think differently and creatively about what someone contributes to others when they have a relationship to them?
Collaborations. We've already mentioned these before, but keep in mind that you don't have to go it alone. You can always join forces with other organisations and do things together.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There are lots of ways of building family and self-leadership. One community living organisation in southern Ontario in Canada created separate organisational structures to enable family leaders and self-advocates to have a huge amount of autonomy over what their contributions are and what activities they do. Now, these sub-organisations have direct representation on the parent organisation's board, they have their own administrative support, they have their own websites, and they have separate branding. And the parent organisation guarantees them some annual funding that they have complete autonomy over how they use. And both groups provide a lot of peer support and share their knowledge and learning broadly in the community, in addition to doing advocacy work.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it is. It's a really good model.
Action learning is a particular approach to peer-supported learning. People who share a passion around a specific issue can support each other to learn more about it and to effect change in their own situations and sometimes more broadly.
Yep. And we know that peer support is valuable and effective, and there are numerous ways of facilitating that to happen. Once again, this is something that your organisation could look at organising yourself and doing internally, or you could collaborate with other organisations to support effective peer support arrangements or organisations that operate more broadly. In WA, the side-by-side program is an example of a peer support approach that's been very successful over several years. There's more information about this example in the supplementary materials for this module.
And when you meet with the two people you identify, you might need to identify what you see as innovative about their arrangement. It's not unusual for people to set things up in a way that works well for them without knowing that no one else is doing it.
Yeah. And so as you look at questions C and D now for this activity, think about how you can explore with people why their experience is worth sharing with other people and families and why they could or should be motivated to share it. Remember that many people get more motivated about why they do something rather than about what they do or how they do it. And you want them to be enthusiastic and passionate, so finding out why they do what they do and why they would want to share their knowledge with others, they're pretty important things to find out.
Of course. You might also need to explore a bunch of other things with the person or family member. This could include their preferred ways of sharing information with other people.
Yep.
For example, some people might love the idea of doing presentations, while others might prefer to make a video story that gets shared via some internet platforms. Others might like a quiet one-to-one coffee catch-up. Explore what works best for the person and what support that might need to make it happen.
Yeah.
Would they like to work with others in a collaboration, perhaps?
And be ready to share your thoughts about what sort of impact you think the person might have by sharing their knowledge and experience. Who else is likely to be interested in what they're doing and benefit from it? And how might other people benefit?
And finally, we want you to make some notes about what you'll do with this information after you've had the conversations with these two people. Who else internally do you need to discuss this with? Will it be information you and other team members share with one another? Or will you present it to your executive managers or CEO in some form? What needs to happen to translate the discussions into some form of action?
Yeah. So pause the recording now and take a few minutes to finish answering the questions for Activity 5.4. When you finish that and you're ready to resume, turn to Activity 5.5 and click play. How are you going? You're almost done, so stay with us for a few more minutes. We're up to Activity 5.5, so open your workbook to that page now.
We've explored lots of fairly practical ideas about how you might be able to empower and enable some of yourself and family leaders to use their skills, knowledge and experience to influence your organisation's services and systems and to benefit other people and families.
In this activity, we want you to take things one step further and think about these partnerships from a strategic point of view. To be really effective with shared management over the long haul, your culture needs to be one in which you constantly improve your ability to work in partnership with people and families in ways that enable them to be the leaders.
So we want you to identify up to three strategic initiatives that you can explore further and hopefully implement to push your organisation in this direction.
We don't want you taking on more than three ideas because sometimes when we try to do too many things, we end up not staying the course with any of them. Or we don't do any of them as well as we need to.
In reality, some of the practical actions you've identified might be quite potent when it comes to having strategic impact. Others maybe not so much.
For example, appointing a person with disability or intellectual disability to your board and providing them with the support they need to perform their role well might create significant changes to how your organisation communicates with people and internally. It might, for example, lead to much broader use of accessible documents and widespread use of the English versions.
Yeah, or it could be that adding something to what you're planning to do will take things to another level in terms of having an impact on your culture. For example, you might be able to partner with an organisation like WACE or peer-led organisations like Valued Lives or People with Disabilities to establish one or more projects that will create ongoing positive ripple effects.
So to complete Activity 5.5, we want you to spend 5 to 10 minutes looking back through the activities in this workbook and revising your responses to Activity 2.3 in Workbook 2. That was an activity that tied Module 2's culture implications together in one place. There may also be other things you've written in response to other topics and modules that will usefully guide your thinking about possible strategic initiatives too. So if any of those activities come to mind, make sure you turn to that workbook and review those activities as well.
We really think that people and families are often an underappreciated and underused resource. People with disability have huge amounts of knowledge and lived experience, but our time and energy is limited, so think about what's the most strategic use of our knowledge and skills.
We started out talking about people being leaders of their own supports, and we're finishing by exploring how powerfully they can contribute to providers having better services.
Along the way, we also recognise that the skills and knowledge they develop from their lived experience can also be a valuable resource for many other people and families.
So thanks for staying with us. Melanie, thanks so much for being my co-host for this module.
It's been a pleasure, Leighton. Thanks for having me. And thanks, everyone. That's all we have for you today. And make sure you spend some time now finishing off Activity 5.5.
We'll see you for Module 6.